Welcome to Big Dog Ball Talk with the boy, man with the boyish charm and the largest arms, Matty Ike, as well as
excuse me,
the man whose takes are barely legal. It's Jordan Flegel. Maybe that'll be the new intro going forward. I'll try to stutter next time. But it's Big Dog Ball Talk. My dad, Jordan Flegel. We hope that you guys are ready to recap some NBA action from this past weekend as well as Monday night. Wanted to get a little bit more to talk about. And I'm actually glad that we did postpone it just a little bit here, Jordan, because there's a lot to talk about. Some teams surging, some teams falling. Our $50 wager has taken an interesting turn.
Oh, yes.
And I think that is probably where we're going to kind of lead. Yeah, we're going to lead today's episode off with that. Before we get into it, Jordan, I want to say for our American listeners, we're sorry if you are no longer able to access the Big Dog Ball Talk TikTok account.
Yeah. I didn't even think of this.
This is a cruel and harsh punishment. So I guess you'll just have to hop over to Big Dog Ball Talk on Instagram and get all the Insta. We'll have to start posting Instagram reels for you guys.
Crazy
time.
Facebook.
What is this, 1984 or whatever the fuck that book's called?
Yeah, no, you got it. 1984.
Orson Welles?
Yes, I think so. No.
Who knows?
That might be. We're gonna need Alex. He's an intellectual to let us know. But I'm pretty sure it's George Orwell. Yes.
I don't know. He's not. He's not an academic, man.
That's true. Arguable. And I mean, you know, we are coming at you a day later than normal. Our listeners know it's a loose schedule. You know, sometimes it's
bad
Saturday,
boys of the podcasting business.
Yeah, you know,
do as we please.
We're loosey goosey, everyone's used to that by now. But yeah, TikTok. Mm-hmm. I didn't even thought about it, Matt. I mean, to be fair, it's not being banned in Canada, and if you, you're still gonna have the app, from what I know. So until you just can't take the bugs anymore, and they're in the U.S., you can still find us. But yeah, this is tragic for us. By far, our most followers are on TikTok. So please, you guys got to migrate to our other accounts where we'll keep you up to date when we feel like it. Rip TikTok, man. TikTok has been great since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first, you know, resisted, I'm like, what are the kids fucking doing on this goddamn app? And then I got it one day. Hours of fun. I got to the point where I'm like, I'm on TikTok too much. Let me delete it. Then I was just watching, just spending just as much time on my phone watching shitty reels. So I'm like, I'm not going to do this. Downloaded TikTok again. More fun. If it changes forever here in the next couple of weeks, I'll be pretty sad. But all things must come to an end. All good things must end. So it is what it is, I guess. But love TikTok, man.
We'll send each other TikToks. Yes, of course. We'll have to wait until the next thing comes out then for the States. But I think Australia is like banning that you can't have social media at all until you're 16 or 17. That's something they're passing. So I'm kind of cool with it. I've said that on here before. I kind of wish that we could just do away with a lot of technology. I think we've just hit an apex here. It's just coming too much. It's become too much. Old man yells at cloud moments happening in our 20s already. So
I don't even want to do this podcast. I want to do it in person. No. I want to like preach to people like Jesus. Mm-hmm. We'll just get people together.
Soapbox.
Yeah, exactly.
The original podcast.
So maybe we'll have that in the future. But for now, we're here.
Don't crucify us for our takes, but we're going to get right into it, starting with what I'd already alluded to here, talking about our $50 wager. Again, for any of you listeners here coming halfway through the season, where the fuck you been? You got to get on this next season. But every year, Jordan and I come together, we place a $50 wager, doing it well before this podcast ever originated, this year, I went back to the OG, the first one that we ever placed, which was, will the Sacramento Kings make the playoffs? Jordan is for the Sacramento Kings to make the playoffs. I was against them. But I got to say right now, Jordan, I don't feel overly confident in that bet. The last time we talked about the Kings, we were talking about, you know, this was after the Mike Brown firing, that things were kind of looking bleak there. They had a losing record and just nothing seemed to be going right. But even in that conversation, we did acknowledge that there were a lot of bright spots with this team. They still had a lot of talent on the roster. They still had some depth. They even still statistically had a really strong offensive rating. They still were able to, you know, compete with a lot of teams. They just couldn't close games out. And seemingly, they've been able to shake whatever monkey was on their back, and have now rattled off 7 consecutive wins, the most across the NBA currently. And the Kings are now sitting 20-19. They're 9th in the Western Conference. They're only a game and a half back from the 6th seeded Clippers right now on Tuesday afternoon. So this is a team that, you know, may very well find their way back into the playoffs this season, Jordan. And again, be behind, De'Aaron Fox, who's been playing solid. Malik Monk getting a bit of an increased role in recent weeks as well through the stretch. And also, I mean, you got to highlight him. Domantas Sabonis really holding it down for this team. I think really establishing himself as kind of the big dog on the squad with De'Aaron Fox missing some time throughout this 7-game winning streak. So, I mean, overall, Jordan, you got to be stoked. What have you really seen from the Kings since they've kind of went on this run that has been the reason that they've been able to propel themselves up the Western Conference standing so far?
Well, Matt, am I allowed to just say that they've played better? Is that enough for you on this podcast?
That's a good take.
It literally looks like, this isn't an abnormal thing when something crazy happens in the middle of a season, like your coach being fired. It does kind of make you look around and realize, like, shit, what can I be doing to be better? Because what was the thing that I first said, if listeners remember, when Mike Brown got fired? It was like, I kind of get this front office like anxiety about this, because I just thought this team should be playing a lot better with the players that they have. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a talented team. They've got good players. They've got young players. They've got vets. They've got a good mix. Obviously, defensively, that's more of their weakness than their strength. Offense is where they sort of, it's what their bread and butter is. But even within that, they just were not looking very good. And it was kind of inexplicable. In many ways, to me at least. It's not all that surprising in my mind that, you look around, Mike Brown is gone. The coach that really revived this franchise in the first place a couple years ago, getting them back to the playoffs. And you kind of look around, you're like, shit, maybe we should just, compete a little bit more, play harder on both ends of the court. And it genuinely does look like they're doing that. Like their last, they edged one out over, Chicago, or eked one out. I don't think I can use edge in any context anymore, which I'm realizing, which is fine.
I don't understand what you're talking about.
You're too old. They got the Bulls in this last one. And then before that, they go into the Garden, beat the Celtics without De'Aaron Fox. That was the, Sabonis 24 rebound game. And it just looked like they just wanted it more. Like, they were out there going after loose balls. They were competing defensively, really taking advantage of their size advantages on the inside, like, Trey Lyles and Sabonis really ate in that game.
Healthy Celtics squad too, to boot. Like, yes. This is the best version of the Celtics they could have played, and they held them to under 100.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like the defensive performance. Obviously, if the Celtics have a bad offensive game, it's usually because they shoot poorly. And of course, they shot 27% from three in this one. It was, a bad showing from them. But, I think the Kings were a part of that. And they just look more connected. You mentioned Malik Monk. He I think has been playing better. Just in general, you've got even a guy like Kevin Huerter, like both of those guys, if you get them playing well, whether they're in the starting lineup, coming off the bench, that's such a huge boost. Takes a lot of pressure off of your other scorers. I think Sabonis is, as the season is going on, sort of getting back to pressing his advantages, which again is inside, rebounding the basketball, shooting sort of timely threes when he needs to. Like in the Celtics game, he was 3-for-4, which is, a big weapon that, he's been able to unlock in more recent seasons. I genuinely think, DeRozan as well, I think has been playing much better of late, being the guy that the Kings wanted him to be when they brought him over. But again, I can get into sort of crazy specifics, like in terms of even the analytical reasons why they're sort of back in these games and winning, because even through this stretch, like when we last looked at them, they were sort of middle of the pack offensively and defensively. They are now 8th in offense, 14th in defense. So now they've really kind of crept up and top 10, 9th overall in net rating. Like they've just sort of tightened things up in every respect. And I think sometimes in the doldrums of the season, when a lot of teams are kind of on autopilot, the Celtics probably one of them, to be honest. And there's a lot of sort of teams that feel like that right now, sort of crawling their way to the All-Star break. All you got to do is have some sort of thing to get you to play a little bit harder, and yeah, just be more sort of cohesive and connected. And I think to me, it's not the most it's not my most polished sort of analysis here, but that's been the biggest thing that I've seen from the Kings in the last week or so.
Yeah, and I don't think that's an unfair statement to make. Is again, like they're doing this. They kind of put in their hard hats on. They're going to work. Yes. It feels like, you know, the distractions are a little bit more minimalized. Maybe it is, you know, they kind of went into the worst of it and everything else. Like it can't get worse than what they were already experiencing early on this season. So I think when you get that early adversity, sometimes you kind of just throw caution to the wind. You go out there and you just play and see what you can do. Or maybe that lights a bit of a fire under your ass because you realize how much you're underperforming, how much more you need to do. Again, a guy like DeRozan, who, you know, his best years are a little bit behind him. Obviously, still, you know, a very solid player. You know, I would say like fringe all-star talent level. I don't think he's going to be getting any consideration for the all-star game this season. But still, you know, on another squad, different opportunity, different situation. Maybe, you know, he'd be in that conversation. But, you know, they've got the talent. They've got the motivation. They've got the, you know, the playoff appearances. Like there's a lot for them to want to play for. So again, it's kind of telling in this, though, in the 7-game win streak, you know, they beat up on the shorthanded Mavericks, you know, they get the 10-point win there, beat up on the dog shit 76ers, you know, still another one that is a small winning margin, but they still get it. But, you know, then they have a shootout with the Grizzlies, get that win, blow out the Warriors by 30. And we're going to be talking about the Warriors here in a little bit as well. Edge out. You like that? Edge,
come on.
Out. The Miami Heat as well, and that Celtics win they had, and then another one that they pulled out very closely against the Bulls, and again, that's what I said kind of leading into this. Like, these are a lot of games where they are competitive. They are playing against solid teams that could have upset them earlier in the season, teams that did upset them earlier in the season, when they just couldn't seem to, you know, buy clutch buckets. And you know, we both highlighted that when we talked with them last year, that it was very odd for two of the most clutch players in the NBA and De'Aaron Fox and DeMar DeRozan not to be converting.
Yep.
DeMar DeRozan has been that guy in the last couple of weeks throughout this win streak. You know, he's hit several big shots, several daggers down the stretch of games, which is something that I think that we both coming into the season did highlight as a huge plus in the signing, because he's not really the traditional, you know, small forward, you know, especially with his limited range from beyond the arc. But when you get a guy who's an elite closer that, you know, maybe he'll only have 12 points, 10 points going into that fourth quarter, if you can give him the ball with the last 3 minutes of the game, you know, within 4 points of the lead, whether you're up or down, he will go out there and he'll make tough shots. He will make the defense feel him. It's a different look as well. Like, a lot of teams aren't prepared. They don't know how to guard a guy like DeRozan on the block or on the elbow, because he brings so many different looks and such a different style that nobody's really used to anymore. I think one of the only guys, and that's someone we're going to talk about in a little bit here, that plays a similar style in the sense that people don't really know how to gauge him defensively right now because it's so different, is Cade Cunningham over there in Detroit. Like, he just plays that old school style that nobody really knows how to guard anymore. It's kind of like the lost art form. I know a lot of people said that about the mid-range, but it really is true in the game of basketball right now. So I think they just have a very lucrative team. They have a very versatile team right now. And things are just starting to click. And I do right now, I feel a little uneasy about the state of my bet with you. But at the same time, as a fan of just good basketball and wanting to see the best teams, right now, I do think that the Kings should be in the NBA playoffs because that's how good they played over the stretch. Now, all that's left to see is, can they maintain it? Can they continue playing defense at the level they've been playing? Because I think that is really going to be the key here. The offense has never really been the problem. Like you said, it's the jump up into the top half of the league in defensive rating that is really telling of kind of the emphasis they put there. So we'll see if Coach Christie can continue doing that for the Kings. But, you know, they've got the Milwaukee Bucks Tuesday night. Night of recording this, and then the Rockets on Thursday. So those are two really tough teams to go up against, and both the Milwaukee game is going to be on the road as well. So going to be a tough little stretch here, but no matter how it goes, they got the Wizards on Sunday, so that should chalk up to a win.
Yes, definitely. And yeah, it's like I agree. I mean, this is 100% more like the team I was expecting to see coming into the year. Again, I was for the DeRozan signing generally. I still, you know, didn't love the fit. I don't think anyone did. It's very clearly not a perfect one. But again, I value what he brings as a vet to a relatively young team, guy with experience. I think all things are sort of coming together in this recent stretch. But like, you know, it's another lesson to sort of not jump to conclusions at certain points throughout what's a very long NBA season. Like, this team, again, offense is supposed to be their strength. Obviously, DeMar DeRozan shooting 31% from three. That's not a surprise. Keegan Murray shouldn't be shooting that percentage from three as well, which is what he's shooting just above that. Like, he's been awful from outside. Malik Monk, supposed to be a pretty good shooter, 33%. Kevin Huerter shooting even worse than DeMar DeRozan from outside this season. So like, you're looking at it and it's like, maybe there's going to be some regression to the mean through the back half of this season, and they're just going to have better shooting luck. And you know, that's the way it goes sometimes with these teams, especially now in the modern era where, you know, the 3-point shot is relied upon so goddamn much. So, you know, I don't think the Kings are as bad as they were when, you know, in the lead up to the Mike Brown firing, but I also don't think they're, you know, as good as they've looked, like beating up on the Celtics at home here in this 7-game win streak. I think they're going to fall somewhere in the middle and be probably for the rest of the year in that, you know, bottom end around that play-in mix, you know, hovering around 500, maybe a few games over. They might dip under it a little bit. But, you know, I think that's kind of where I had pegged them. I can't do this. Where I had put them earlier on, you know, but coming into the season. Them. Yeah. That's where I think ultimately they're going to end up. But again, it's another sort of lesson maybe to the Kings front office not to fucking overreact and just go to blame your coach. Because if what I'm saying comes true and they get this, you know, much better shooting luck through the second half, they start winning these games, you've just let go of Mike Brown, who's the only like smart, defensive sort of mind within this group, or like the leader of that. Like, people forget Mike Brown was brought in to help improve the Kings defense. And now it feels like the Kings are like, okay, that's not working. And it's almost like they are trying to get rid of that whole philosophy and say, look, we just got to hope that we can play better on the offensive side. Not saying Doug Christie isn't a great sort of X's and O's coach defensively, but we just don't know. He doesn't have the track record as that guy sort of in the top spot. So I think another thing, again, not groundbreaking analysis, but you know, it's a make or miss league. When shots don't go in, you know, people start to panic. But again, if you're the Kings, you're hoping for all of these guys, you can turn this around through the back half of the season here, and get back to the playoffs, make me some money.
We'll keep a close eye on them. Hopefully they do finish in that play-in tournament. Last time we actually got that was in the Pelicans a few years ago. That just makes things a lot more fun when it literally is do or die, both for their playoff hopes as well as for our fans.
Yes.
So we'll keep an eye on that one. And moving on, we'll talk about another team here out east, though. That's the second hottest team in the NBA, hottest team in the East right now. It's the Indiana Pacers. 6-game win streak, 7-3 in their last 10. A team that, again, we also kind of not wrote off, but I don't think either one of us really saw them getting back into the top six of the Eastern Conference. But amidst, you know, the turbulent Miami Heat and just the general lackluster play of all these other teams throughout the Eastern Conference, they've kind of surged their way back into that top five. They're now only a half game back from the Orlando Magic for the 4 seed. And the Pacers, they're looking good. It's an interesting squad. Obviously, we've kind of talked about them before because, you know, the offense has never been an issue. Offense has never been a problem with this team. They are high flying. They're high pace, high volume shot creation.
Kings it's always East, been the you defense. Could say.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah, I think it's a good comparison. You know, very very different kind of disparity of talent, I would say. Which is again kind of funny with Tyrese Haliburton, Domantas Sabonis, all that linkage there.
Yes, also linked.
But,
yes.
The last game that they won on Sunday over the Cavaliers. Again, the number one offense in the NBA held them to 93 points, gives them their 5th loss. And again, that's against a divisional rival as well. Now, the divisions are quite as important in the NBA. But, you know, to have that kind of a win, kind of like the Kings win over the Celtics, like this was a dominant 15-point victory over the Cavs. It was pretty close for most of the game, but the second half in general, The Pacers just ran away from it, and they looked strong. And again, it was kind of a nice. The Pacers, when they're clicking, are one of the actually the most fun, most enjoyable teams to watch, because yep. they move the ball so beautifully. They spread the rock. They share the sugar. They had six guys in double digits in that game against the Cavaliers. And that's just kind of a testament to what they need to do. Other than Siakam, everybody else also is shooting fairly well on, moderate volume. Like, I think really my only, gripe with the squad is and will probably continue to be the consistency of Tyrese Haliburton. But again, when you have so much depth on this team, like a guy like TJ McConnell, who can just be slotted in there and play fourth quarter minutes when he needs to, like Nembhard can slide up to the one and play as well and lead the offense. Like, they've got a lot of creators on this team. They just don't really have a star. And I think really that's my only concern going forward is, that, down the stretch of the playoffs, who are they going to look to get them a bucket and take over the game? Because I just think that's the only part they're lacking. But basketball is a team sport, Jordan. And right now it looks like they're one of the best well-oiled units across the NBA.
Yes, definitely hit a bit of a hot streak here and are able to do it without having to fire Rick Carlisle like the Kings did. So good for them. They were able to keep their, veteran coach in there. To me, also, I'm not going to cop out twice in a row and say the Pacers have just been playing harder as well, but I think they have. I think they've Nembhard came back, fairly recently, and I think he helps them, just so much in that backcourt, like you're saying. Tyrese is super inconsistent, and that's been sort of, that isn't like a blip now. I think that's more like a reality in that, it, especially in terms of his scoring, like he can go off for 20, 30 points one game, or in this one, in a win, like you were saying against the Cavs, 2 points. The fact that they were able to win with him, scoring that little is, impressive in and of itself. But Nembhard is just such a great sort of Swiss Army knife guy to have in that backcourt. Like you said, can play off the ball, can play on it, can sort of give you all this type of versatility, and is a solid defender on the other end as well. Mm-hmm. That's got to be the main takeaway.
And Canadian,
of course.
Lots of Canadians on this team.
And yeah, with Mathurin in the starting lineup as well, playing very well this year as well. Between Nembhard and Turner, and Siakam when he's locked in, you've got some decent individual defenders. Like, those guys can defend, and you saw especially in this Cavs game in that third quarter, they just really sort of locked in, moved their feet, and I think sort of just showed what they can do when they're at sort of tip top level. Again, they're still missing their best defender, I would say, and certainly on the perimeter, and Nesmith, when he comes back, which will hopefully be soon. I think that does sort of transform how they look, because he's also super versatile, can slide up and down, and really gets after it. But again, you do have at least the potential to score 115, 120 points every night with this Pacers offense. But yeah, you do have to stop other teams, and you've got to play hard, with the squad to be able to go and do it. When they show that ability to get after it, and they're leveraging the guys that are good at that, the few of them that they have, then they can compete, and they look more like the Pacers of last year. You mentioned the bunch of different guys in double figures, like sort of scoring by committee. That is also another super useful thing to have during the regular season, to sort of rack up wins when other teams don't really know.
A huge bonus for them going through that whole Eastern Conference Finals run last year. It felt like there was multiple times that too. Guys were down, guys went up, and it really, there wasn't a huge, huge gap in talent level, between the replacements.
Yes. Very deep team, which again, great in the regular season. You just mentioned, though, in the intro about them needing a star, someone to sort of close games. You need a certain amount of health luck when it comes to making deep playoff runs. You don't normally play like I'm looking through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They basically brought a full 5-man unit off the bench to play rotation minutes in this one. That's going to be cut way short. Could you maybe do a bit of consolidation, get in the Jimmy Butler game here, maybe?
Yeah, I think
this is a team I've mentioned offhand, but this is another one of those squads where I think they are sort of looking for a big dog to come in and really take the reins. So, you know, just mm-hmm. throwing that out there. But it, certainly in the regular season, it does help to have all these different contributors. Like Obi Toppin, I think, is a super underrated guy to sort of bring off the bench. A guy like Jairus Walker, I've been impressed with more recently, like getting some minutes now with some of the injuries they've had in that front court. You know, he's a guy that I think they can rely on, you know, or can sort of, he can develop into a guy that they can rely on. So I'm happy to see him getting more minutes. The thing with the Pacers still though, is when they looked at their best last year through, you know, that in-season tournament period and everything, like we don't have to remind people before Tyrese Haliburton went down, he looked like one of the best players in the world. So if he can get back to that and really, really like start collapsing defenses and getting other guys involved, and, you know, getting back up to those assist numbers that we're used to him seeing, then you really are looking at a dangerous team. You know, even in the absence of that, the fact that they can put together these wins with him still not playing great is a good sign for the squad.
Well, I like the Jimmy Butler call out. I kind of flirted around with that and tried to look at it. They ended up having to trade like six players for Jimmy Butler to make the money work. And they just have all their money wrapped up through Tyrese, Siakam, and Miles Turner. So it would be tough to get the deal done. Maybe you'd have to get a third team in there somehow to make it work. But definitely the trade itself makes a lot of sense. Like we said, it really does end up coming down to the defense with this team. I think when you look at the six-game streak, I wouldn't say that they're the most impressive wins in a six-game streak. Obviously, the Cavalier win is awesome. Recording this on Tuesday afternoon, they are playing the Cavs in the rematch now, hosting They're hosting the Cleveland Cavaliers Tuesday night. So that'll see if they can continue the streak and make it back-to-back wins over the Cavs, which would be insane. No one's done it this season. Thing I want to kind of point out, even though, you know, you're beating on teams like the Suns, who are, you know, still kind of trying to figure things out, the Miami Heat, who we've mentioned are disgruntled, the Bulls with no direction, the Warriors, who we're going to talk about, and the bottom feeder Nets, three of those six wins, they held them to under 100 points, including the Cavaliers, which is, you know, a really promising sign. And every single one of those six wins was by double digits. So I don't think that this is necessarily like a fluky streak by any means. Like, yes, the quality of the competition isn't great, but unlike the Kings, who multiple games throughout their seven-game win streak have kind of gone down to the wire, the Pacers have been chilling. Once they get to the fourth quarter, they turn on the gas, and they've been kind of running away with these things. So I really do think that this is a legitimate run that they're going on right now. I definitely still have my my nerves and my qualms with this squad, but I think that you know, the Pacers, they should be able to find themselves into that top six mix, especially considering how fucking bad the East is right now. You know, moving forward, I do think that, you know, maybe they do want to, you know, try and upgrade this team a little bit. I know they love hoarding all that depth, but like we've said before, you can only have so much depth before it actually kind of comes back to bite you in the playoffs.
Yes. I mean, that's the other thing too about, you know, you're mentioning them sort of running away with these games, like having that depth, not just like having guys to rely on in terms of, you know, talented guys in your rotation. That's part of it as well, but they just have, you just have more energy reserves to pull from. Like as the long season goes on, like you've seen Memphis do this, you know, now for a number of years where they just have so many guys that they can throw out there. And it's like, these teams that are a bit more shallow, especially, you know, the ones that have vets on them. I mean, Golden State's a fairly good example, though they're deeper this year, but you know, a lot of their guys have, you know, kind of fallen off more recently. But like those teams tend to get gassed in the middle of the season and sort of struggle through. Whereas, teams with these sort of battalions of fresh legs they can throw on the court handle those periods of the season a lot better. But it's true. Mm-hmm. Like the Pacers, this is one of the reasons I still don't fully believe in them until they make a true consolidation trade to really bolster that. You know, again, when you get into the playoffs, it's about your top seven. How good are your top seven? That we just talked about that with the Cavs, who are, you know, the best team in the NBA sort of record-wise and have been all year. Do we trust fully their top seven or eight? There's some suspect guys in there. You don't really have that question with a team like Boston. Like they're so talented at the top. You obviously don't want to be too top heavy. And we've been talking all year about how important depth is. But at the same time, when it comes down to it, the best players are who are going to win in this league every time. And the best two-way players. And you're looking at Indiana, like they've got talented guys, they've got a bunch of contributors, but I think when you whittle it down to their top seven, there leaves a lot to be desired. So yeah, whether it's Jimmy, whether it's some other sort of better, again, two-way player that they can get involved in sort of on the sweepstakes of, like, you know, there's still guys potentially for sale out of Brooklyn. Cam Johnson is over mm-hmm. there. Teams are sniffing around him, you know, by
I wouldn't give a first round pick for that guy. I'll tell you that.
Well, no, but you know, he's a guy who I think would fit quite well theoretically, you know, with the Pacers as a guy who can shoot it and can defend.
I hear Jonas is available for 2 seconds.
There's Jonas, who doesn't really help your pick and roll defense, but he's just a fun guy to have around. So I'd consider it. And, you know, that history with Siakam as well. Don't overlook that. If you're the Pacers, like, I think, you know, your goal, obviously they're sitting in the fifth spot right now. You've got to try to avoid the play-in at all costs. You want that, maybe even try and fight for home court advantage. I don't think it's going to happen, but you can try. I think ultimately if you want to be taken seriously, you've got to make a move. I still don't think this team, quite has it, you know, despite how well they've played recently when you're looking at a playoff context anyway.
Well, again, we'll keep a close eye on the Pacers as well, and see if they can keep the streak up or if this is all just a little bit fugazi. But again, in the Eastern Conference, kind of seems like anybody can kind of pop off for 5-6 wins very quickly.
Yes, true.
Moving on to the last of our bright spots here on the podcast, a team that, they're starting to heat up here, Jordan, and we're going to pose the question on whether or not they are
legitimate. We're talking about your team.
Oh, yeah, the team, I should say. My Detroit Pistons got the win over the Raptors, too. Got to love it. I wasn't able to attend this year, probably because I'm banned from the arena, but that's not here nor there. But 8 wins out of their last 10 games, pardon me. 8-2 in those last 10. And really looking solid. I mean, coming off of the game last night, Monday night, big win over the New York Knicks. Really competitive game. I can say it. When Jaden Ivey went down, I really didn't think that the season was going to get better for them. They were kind of hovering around the play-in mix in the Eastern Conference. Things weren't really going the way they wanted
to. And Jaden Ivey had been playing well. My guy, rooting for.
One of their best players this year, for sure. I still think he had another level to get to this season.
Oh, yeah.
But unfortunately, that's not going to be the case now. But Cade Cunningham has really taken over for this team, looking like a legitimate superstar potential type of player that, you know, again, he had so much hype coming into the league, the number one overall pick coming out of, I believe it was Oklahoma State. He's really kind of turned into like a very special offensive talent in the league. I think that defensively, he's still not, a lockdown guy by any means, but he's got a big body. He's able to get in front of the ball and stay, ferocious when he wants to be. So I've been really, really, really impressed by Cade Cunningham this season. By far his best year in the NBA, which, should be the way it's going. But sometimes those number one picks, they kind of crack under that pressure. Throughout eight wins out of their last 10, this kind of hot streak that the Pistons have been on, as they've risen into the top eight of the Eastern Conference and have no signs of slowing down, really. Now over also 500, 21-19 total record on the season. What the hell is Malik Beasley on, man? This guy has been going absolutely bonkers since he's kind of gotten this increased role with this team. Just shooting the lights out, hit the dagger in the last night's game against the Knicks in MSG. 22 points, 18 points, 21 points, 23 points, a 5-point game against Portland, but I mean, that's Portland, and then a 23-point game again against Minnesota. Like, he has been absolutely sensational for the Pistons as of late. Tim Hardaway Jr. also has been on a pretty nice streak here as well. He's been really solid off the bench. It just seems like the Pistons might actually be fun to watch for the first time since Blake Griffin was here.
Yes, I think you can make that pronouncement now 100%. Like, just watching Cade alone with a semi, just semi competent team around them. Like I would call this team more than that, but like last year, you go to last year, they were not that. And, you know, Cade was, when he was able to be on the court, you know, he could put up great numbers, but he had absolutely no help. And it wasn't something you wanted to watch. He is masterful, and he's making his case in that draft class, which it was the Mobley Barnes draft class.
Yeah. Mobley, like, Barnes, Suggs.
Yeah. And Wagner as well. Right?
Yeah. Franz, pardon me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think he's making his case in that class to be like, hey, you guys forgot about me. I know Scotty Barnes won Rookie of the Year. I know Evan Mobley is, you know, everyone's sort of the stat heads darlings. But, you know, I'm still here, and I'm the only one, like, you know, being a lead ball handler on a team, you know, running a team here. And he's just looked so, so effective this year. 25 points, 9.5 assists, 6.7 rebounds, you know, a 6.6. Pardon me, gave him an extra point there. And 38% from three on 6.5 attempts. Like, that's incredible for a guy who's still only 23 years old, has a lot of pressure on his shoulders, you know, has a lot of that sort of defensive attention as well in every game. Like, he is the scouting report, really. But, you know, it does just go to show, like, when you have a young team like the Pistons, we've been complaining about them for a few years. They were just piling up all these young talent, and it's like, okay, you eventually do need to take a risk, take a step forward, sign some vets, and then maybe you'll get better. Do I think signing Tobias Harris, Malik Beasley, and then acquiring Tim Hardaway Jr. was the right thing to do? No, those were not the vets.
What about Simone
I would have
Fontecchio?
Chosen. And Fontecchio, can't forget about him.
And they draft Ron Holland with the 5th overall pick.
Yes, yes. But, like, just, you know, getting the veterans in there, I wouldn't have chosen those three guys that I mentioned in particular. But just having any of them is such a, you're seeing this year the huge difference that they make. Like, those guys are, you know, experienced. They've been in the playoffs. They know what it takes to be on winning squads, and they spread the floor. They create space for Cade to operate. And that's literally all you needed. It's such a simple formula to sort of get this team up off the mat and actually being competitive. Again, you can upgrade those, and I would strongly recommend upgrading those veteran spots, specifically when it comes to Tobias Harris, because we know how shit he is. We've been very clear about that on this podcast.
Unless they play the Pacers, and then he'll be your Siakam stopper.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, just having any semblance of some adults in the room, you know, which I've said a lot of times, you know, even about a team like Charlotte, like all these young teams, as soon as you get guys who have been around winning cultures and who are a bit older and been in the league for a while, it does really help. And I think, yeah, you're seeing that this year. Obviously, JB Bickerstaff has done a great job. He actually wants to be coaching this team, unlike Monty Williams, who clearly just was kind of talked into it. And so, yeah, I think it's just a simple formula. I mean, it's how you would create a team around any sort of ball dominant creative guard like a Luka, like a even LeBron. I know he's not a guard, but, you know, the guys who sort of can control the pace of a game, are good scorers and passers, and can do a lot of things. You just put a bunch of shooters around them. That's what and one big that they can run a pick and roll with, which is Jalen Duren on this team. That's what Detroit has done, and you know, they're sort of reaping the rewards right now. You know, it does really suck though that Ivy is out, because he was that other sort of spark in that starting lineup, the other little bit of creativity, who had really come around shooting the ball from outside this year, 40% on 5 attempts, which is just
almost
great.
41.
Yeah. So, you know, that's better than anyone was expecting. And then, you know, you can push another guy, you know, whoever steps up for him in that starting lineup to the bench. It kind of fills things out a little bit. So that is too bad. I think that sort of does kind of, you know, limit how far they can go ultimately. And, you know, I don't think there's any chance they win a round or anything like that, but I think they could, you know, give some teams, you know, a run for their money, depending on who they meet up with in the playoffs, you know, assuming they get there. And Cade, I think, is just sort of keeps pushing, you know, his ceiling higher and higher, you know, game by game here. He's just, he is sort of living up to that hype that was placed around him in the draft as this sort of Luka-like, you know, kind of not the most athletic guy, but he's strong, he's big, he's gonna sort of break you down, use angles, really, really good in the pick and roll. And yeah, if he can keep that sort of 3-point percentage up where it's at right now or higher, he's gonna be scary. I mean, we're gonna be talking about All-Stars soon, you know, not to, you know, show our hand here, but I think he's going to come up pretty prominently in that discussion. My only thing before I throw it to you, Matt, is Jalen Duren. He's got to be better. I mean, he's
been weak.
Got a lot of potential. You know, we both really like him. Again, I know he's still only 21. I think he was big dog of the month once.
Yeah, he did it. Yeah. I think it was last year.
Yeah. So he's got to get back to that. Cause I watched some Pistons games, and I see him just basically weekly running up and down the center of the court, not looking very engaged, not doing very many things. I know it's tough for a young guy, you know, especially a big man who you know, he let's be honest, Detroit's not running any plays for him or anything, but, you know, it's that classic sort of DeAndre Ayton type thing. You got to, you know, tell a young guy, look, if you're going to run the floor hard, Cade's going to find you. You're going to get rewarded with dunks. You know, you're going to get blocks if you get back in transition. And we're going to go from there. So he's the only guy I'm like, come on, pick up the slack a little bit. But otherwise, yeah, it's just been a great showing from this whole squad recently.
Well, I do honestly want to say, like, in the last little while, like, I actually think the Pistons are one of the more fun teams to watch, which is crazy, since they had three wins at this point last year.
Yes.
I'm really, really excited to, like, I obviously heard we're all Raptors fans on this podcast, but at the end of the day, like, I do like seeing the evolution of teams. I like seeing when a team goes through the struggles and they can kind of come through the fire a little bit stronger, a little more battle worn, and figure things out. And I really do hope they make the playoffs. I hope that they do, and they can, you know, ramp up some development on this team and figure it all out. And you know, I wanted to say, first off, it's great because, you know, this team, they, like you said, they have the veteran presence. They got the star power. They got a guy who will absolutely kick your ass if you mess with them. And Beef Stew, Isaiah Stewart, he's been a freak all year again. He really is like Draymond if he was actually scary and just couldn't pass. Like, it's pretty much the play style. That's
same
his
shooting ability.
It's his archetype. Yeah, exactly. He can shoot a little bit, but
a little.
Yeah, not too much. I'd say about as much as Draymond. They got Beef Stew. But the one last guy I want to mention on this team that has really kind of elevated them, and I know he was out for a little bit this season, but has also stepped up huge since Jaden Ivey's been out, is Azur Thompson.
Yes.
Both the Thompson twins have been fucking awesome in their NBA careers. Like, this season, they're both breaking out. Amen in Houston is looking like, you know, potentially a centerpiece that they can kind of include in this rebuild along Sengun and Green, which is awesome to see. Because again, coming into their NBA careers, but their drafts, you know, a lot of people talk about the lack of jump shot. They didn't play in college. They played in whatever the hell it was called, the JBA or whatever. You know, a lot of question marks around what they were going to be able to bring to the table at an NBA level. And I think they've kind of shut that all down. Like, they are freak athletes, great passers, amazing rebounders. Again, they had that huge off the glass lob to Thompson a couple a week ago.
Yep,
head above the rim. I think that, you know, he is a guy that if him and his brother could figure out how to shoot the three ball, it's over. Like, these guys will be all stars. Like, I really do think that their ceilings are that high right now, and that is perfect to hear if you are a Detroit Piston fan, that, you know, in the next couple of years you could have Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, and, you know, possibly Asur Thompson, and Jalen Duren if he can kind of figure it out. Like, those are four really solid pieces that all play at different positions. Like, then you're just one more forward away from really having a solid starting five you can build around. Like, I think they're in the perfect position right now to keep developing and keep ramping up and moving their way through the Eastern Conference standings. And again, the Eastern Conference is ripe for the taking outside of the top three of the Cavs, the Celtics, the Knicks. I mean, maybe you can include the Magic in there. Like, the Bucks obviously have that upside. Like, it's still very, very, very open-ended. Like, I do think the Pistons, if all things kind of worked out, they could even pull off an upset in the first round of the playoffs. I don't think they've got what it takes to go on a deep run, but I think they have at least upset potential.
Yeah, because you're a homer, Matt.
That's what it is.
Doing what we used to do to the Raptors. Crazy optimism into the Pistons.
Hair.
I love it. Yeah, there you go. But yeah, I'm glad you brought up Thompson. You're 100% right. He is the one who is sort of stepping in now to that starting lineup for Jaden Ivey. So maybe that can be a little bit of you know, you obviously don't want anyone to get hurt, but when one guy goes down, presents opportunities for sort of the next guy up to prove themselves. We see it time and time again. So he is just going to get more play, and yeah, he's a huge part of what makes this team so exciting to watch. Like you were saying, like, he's just just insane physical plays and athletic plays that you feel like you've never seen before on like a game to game basis. Like he's just incredible. And yeah, a great sort of partner for Cade to run up and down that wing. Like I could see a lot more lob passes, you know, out in transition from Cade to Thompson for many years to come, if they can sort of stay together, build on that chemistry. And yeah, you're right. Like this is, an opportunity for just this squad in general to say, like we were just talking about, like this is sort of, you know, the middle of a long season. We are a team with a lot of young guys. You know, we do have fresh legs. Apart from Jaden Ivey, they've got no one even else, you know, dealing with any major injuries, knock on wood, you know, right now. So they're relatively healthy. So yeah, they can get after it, get as good of a sort of seed as they can. I mean, it's not out of the question that they could make it in the top six and avoid the play-in as well, which should probably be a goal for them, you know, as it would be for most teams sort of in this mix. And then, yeah, man, if they could pull off an upset, that would be, that'd be a pretty crazy turn of events based on how bad they were last year.
Well, to move on here, Jordan, enough of being happy, enough about praising some of these young teams. Let's shit on the old heads, the team that...
Hold on, I'm happy. We're going to shoot on the Warriors.
Happiness.
I'm thrilled.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is a team that, you know, it's like when the Patriots now, they're dog shit and they're dealing with the dog days. I mean, they just signed Mike Vrabel as a new coach, so they're going to be sick next year, I'm sure. But they were shit this year, they're shit last year, which is nice to see after all their years of dominance. And it's the same thing with the Warriors right now. Steve Kerr doesn't really know what to do out there with this squad when he doesn't have a super team like the Warriors dynasties of the 2010s or, you know, Team USA. Kind of gets exposed a little bit here and there. No Kuminga still, obviously, still dealing with some injuries. And yeah, this Warriors team, man, I think that they just don't have an identity right now. And I don't think that they really have much passion out there. 4-6 in their last 10, 2-game losing streak. And, you know, it can't be emphasized enough how embarrassing it is to lose to the Toronto Raptors in 2024-2025. Like that, I think the Raptors are the worst closing team in the NBA this season. If you were to break down some kind of a stat, like they never win these close games. Somehow they found a way to pull it out and they get torched by fucking Chris Boucher. So I think that there's a lot that you can examine and dissect from this Warriors team. But I got to say, man, I do think they started the season off hot. They started off perfectly fine, but it just seems like teams have kind of figured them out a little bit. It is actually insane to say. I do think that without Kuminga might actually be the difference maker on the squad currently, because Curry's still having a solid season. You know, 26-7-7 in the last game against the Raptors. But like I think him announcing, saying that like his career is almost over, that you know, next year could be it, 2 years from now. I think he's already kind of got 1 foot out the door, if I'm being honest. I don't think that you see the same Curry that was fired up. Like, I think he knows. He's got his rings. He's got his MVPs, Hall of Fame career lock, Olympic gold medal. Like, I just think he's done it all. I think he knows this team probably isn't good enough to get there. Like, we saw this happen when, you know, they had that really bad tanking year where they went to where they were able to select James Wiseman. They got the number 2 overall pick. Like, I think when Curry sees the writing on the wall, he just kind of mails it in. Like, yeah, still has good stats. He still is doing, you know, Steph Curry things on the court. But I just don't see this team right now looking like a legitimate playoff squad. They still have a shot. They still have a lot of talent up and down. There's still a lot of depth. But it just seems like teams have kind of figured them out. And it doesn't look like a team that is really all that motivated to continue trying to make that postseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when I watch Steph these days, it reminds me of like in pickup when you're playing, like there's clearly a guy on the team who like is the only guy you have to worry about. Like literally everyone else, you can let them shoot. You don't even care where they're fucking standing. Give them an open layup. They're not going to make it. But this one guy will kill you if you forget about him. So everyone is just zoned in on him. And he just like, you literally can't even do
That's
anything.
That's Andrew Wiggins you're talking about. Right?
Yes, exactly. Spoiler alert, it's Wiggins. But you can't even do anything when you're that guy, because like there's nothing you can do. I mean, you can just give the ball up to, you know, whoever's coming to fucking the nearest guy who's double teaming you. But there's no way to get out of it. It's like you're in a straitjacket. That's what Steph sort of deals with on a night-to-night basis, because outside of him, the offense that this fucking Warriors team presents, you know, to you know, opposing squads is so awful. They are 21st in the league offensively. That is crazy for a Steph Curry led team to be that bad. Yeah. They're just, you know, my God, they are begging for a consolidation trade. All these guys that they have that
offense has been bad all year. They make that move for Schroeder, thinking that he's going to continue putting up 20 and 12, and it's like
nope,
he's putting up 20 and 12 on a team where he could take fucking 15 shots. I don't know how they think of the pairing him next to Steph Curry makes any sense. Shout out to Scotty Barnes also for stuffing his shit on that 3-point shot and staring him down. Fuck you, Dennis.
Fuck you, Dennis. It's just insane how uninspiring and bad this team is outside of Steph. And then it's exacerbated in a game like last night against Toronto when Draymond doesn't play, because Draymond is sort of the guy who can unlock Steph when everyone's all over him. Like that's how they've figured it out for years. Draymond's guy sort of sags off of him has his eye towards Steph. Draymond comes up, sets that screen. Steph has all this room, and then he rolls and they get everything going from there. In years past, they've obviously had Klay, and they've had, I mean, even forget the KD years, but they've had Iguodala, and they've had all these other really good playmakers in these Steve Kerr type players that he knows how to sort of coach and sort of make things happen with. They're just full of a bunch of young guys or like vets who are kind of inconsistent. Like, when you're looking at a Buddy Hield and a Schroeder, like this isn't the type of player that the Warriors have sort of been successful with in the Steph era. And yeah, Steph out there a lot of the time just looks kind of exhausted, defeated, like he doesn't really know what to do. I'm kind of looking at this team now. I know we've talked about Jimmy Butler linked to this team in the past. I'm more on the Zach LaVine train now. Like, what else do you have to lose? Yeah. Like, I know it's a big contract to swallow.
He's definitely not going to help your defense.
He's not going to help you do it, but they don't even need help defensively. They are top 10 still, despite all the guys that have been missing in and out of the lineup. They're eighth overall in defense, which is fine. It's the 21st on offense that I think they need to address. And at the very least, if you're bringing in Zach LaVine, who once again is shooting the ball amazing from the outside this year, 45% from three on 7.5 attempts. He's coming in. You pair him in the backcourt with Steph, as long as he sort of knows that he's really going to just be a lot of the time a standstill shooter. He's not going to obviously have the ball in his hands quite as much as over there in Chicago. But theoretically, that's a mini sort of Splash Brothers impression. And I know people might say, well, they tried that with Buddy Hield earlier on. I think Zach LaVine is pretty obviously a better player than
Buddy
Hield
in
a lot of different respects. And he brings you some juice off the bounce as well. Like, he can get to the rim, honestly, at his best, probably better than Klay even ever was. I mean, Klay was underrated in that respect, but yeah, well, I'm trying, you know, I'm not the biggest Zach LaVine guy, but you know, I think in spurts and in best case scenarios, he is a great two guard in the league. So I think you're at that time, that moment in time now where I think you need to make that move, even if it's maybe a bit of a panicky one. Like, you're under 500 now. You are right at the bottom of this whole Western Conference jumble. You do not have the luxury to say, oh yeah, we're going to just rely on Steph and Draymond to do all this heavy lifting to lift us back up to a point where we're not just like barely scraping the play in and could maybe get through it to, oh great, we'll face the fucking Thunder or we'll face, the Mavs or something. If they actually want to compete for real, I think they got to make a move like that. And I think Zach LaVine's the guy. So I've seen what I need to see, but like you said, I'm never going to be unhappy, displeased. I'm nothing but pleased when the Warriors are struggling. Cause yeah, they've had their time in the sun, plenty of years there where they were by far and away the best team in the league. They can suffer as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think the suffering may be due to continue. It's funny you brought up Zach LaVine, because I do think he'd be a good fit for this team. You know, get their scoring up. Would obviously be tough for them to make it work financially. You look around, like, it would have to be Wiggins involved in this trade somehow, which, I mean, what team in the right mind would want to give Andrew Wiggins if you got him on your roster? But they'd have to give him up, plus a couple of these other guys. I don't think right now that they want to give up Kuminga unless they're going to be getting a ton of other assets back. I don't think LaVine really fits what they're trying to get in return for him if he was going to be included in any kind of a move. I mean, hell, you could trade Draymond if you really want.
Are you looking at the salaries right now, Matt?
That's happening. Yeah, I can see it all.
Okay, because I mean, I know also Vucevic has somewhat been linked to the Warriors in the past. Could you do a Vucevic and LaVine?
Yeah, it would work great because
how many players would the Warriors would have left?
Yeah, it seems like it would be a great fit, those two on the same team. Would result in probably a lot of playoff wins. That's where I was going to go with this too. Vucevic, way easier to trade for. Only a $20 million cap hit on his contract. Also, only 2 years, whereas LaVine signed up for 3 years. And again, $23 million a year on that contract. And they do Jesus. I think they would really benefit from an offensive-minded five. Like Trayce Jackson-Davis, you know, you've done your best. Kevon Looney, you've been playing way more minutes in the NBA than I think most people ever thought you would.
Definitely.
And still played solid. Like he's had some good games in his career. But by no means do I think Kevon Looney should still be like a rotational guy on this Warriors team. He's been fucking kicking around for years and years and years, it feels like now. And I think Vucevic would be an awesome guy to include there. He really stretches the floor out. You know, him and Steph, I think, would be a very interesting kind of pick and pop, pick and roll duo. Again, you can move Draymond in there and he'll have more than one guy to really pass it out to and hit on the perimeter. Maybe you can find a way to keep Wiggins in that deal because you only need to give up to, you know, $20 million worth of salary. But, you know, maybe you move him and just kind of cut your losses there. But either way, I do think the Vucevic move, which has been kind of rumored to be on the table, be more of an interest than a Jimmy Butler trade, which I also do. We talked about the Jimmy Butler Golden State fit before, that it just really doesn't seem like it would be counterproductive for them at this point, or just productive, rather. So I think that the Warriors, they're in a bad way. They still got a chance, I think, to turn things around, but I really don't like to see any kind of team start the season hot and then hit the free fall in the middle of the season, because best case scenario, you're climbing your way back up the standings in the second half of the year. But more often than not, a team that starts hot and goes downwards ends up being a team that gets knocked out of playoff contention early, because it's more likely that you come back up and stay hot rather than get hot, lose it, and then get hot again. So things are looking bleak for the Warriors, but you know what? You got fucking four championship rings to sleep on.
I know. It's like, shut up. If any fans trying to complain to me, I will knock you out. One more thing that just occurred to me, Matt.
Punch.
You know me. One more thing. We've talked a lot recently, or, you know, somewhat a lot recently about the Suns, another struggling team. Mm-hmm. What if Bradley Beal said to you, hey, I'll waive my no trade clause for the Warriors to go play with Steph? Would you, if you're Phoenix, think about giving up Bradley Beal? And then you could, you know, you could recoup some of the depth. I know it's a similar sort of struggle, a similar massive contract like LaVine's, but could you could you make something happen with one of these bigs where Phoenix is very weak? Like if you got a Looney or a Trayce Jackson-Davis or some of these other sort of rotation guys that could fill out Phoenix's bench, does that wet your whistle at all, Matt, if from the Phoenix perspective?
I mean, I think, again, to switch to the Phoenix side of things, I mean, like, yeah, I think it would make sense. I think I would really just want to see if I could get any kind of picks.
True.
I think if you're gonna move Bradley Beal, I would want at least one first round pick coming back, which I think they could probably get, especially since it would be like fucking Moses Moody, Buddy Hield, Podzemski, like guys like that getting sent over in exchange. So yeah, I mean, you may as well at this point. I mean, Bradley Beal, if you're gonna be coming off the bench, you may as well just get some actual guys who are built to come off the bench. So or you go out there and you just do one for one, you get Wiggins and a couple guys and call it a day, because then you win the trade.
Sure.
It's better than two first round picks. But yeah, it's an interesting fit. I do think that Beal next to Curry would be very interesting. Again, like we said, sacrifice a little bit of that defense for some offense that they desperately need. And like I said, Beal underrated season statistically right now. And you pair him next to Steph, I think the two of them could work well together. So it'd be very interesting to see. And we got to get a trade. We got to get one of these big names. I feel like this is like the first year. Like there actually legitimately should be like three or four mega trades this season, like really really jaw droppers. I feel like every year we get one. This year we should get like two or three. But again, I'm getting worried. I thought Jimmy Butler would be traded by now. I'm already seeing reports now that he's gonna play even amidst all these trade talks once he comes
Don't
back
do it,
after
Jimmy.
The suspension.
Take the fines.
Just fucking annoying. Yeah, he's never gonna get traded if he comes back and plays. But let us know who you guys want to see the Warriors make a move for. Let us know what you think of the Pacers, the Kings, and of course the Pistons. How their hot streaks have been. Do you think they're legit? Do you think it's going to continue? Which of those teams do you think has the best chance to make a deep run in the playoffs? Let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk. Probably not on TikTok for that much longer, but go check us out at TikTok,
for now, though.
Instagram, Facebook for all you old heads out there. Well, X. Give us a follow. Help us. Help you. And we will see you guys on Friday. But until then, it's Big Dog Ball Talk. My name is Jordan Pleagle, and as my good friend Jordan always says.
Friday or Saturday, like I said, it's loose, you know.
Yeah, whatever happens.
We're chilling. Monday. But yeah, enjoy TikTok, Americans, while you still can. Like I said, lots of great memories on that platform. Mm-hmm. I think we all love it. I saw someone comment on a thing like being sad about TikTok ending. They're like, "Oh, this sucks. Should we all go out for a drink or something when this happens?" Just that's how I feel. We've really built a community, me and you, Matt, on TikTok mm-hmm. with all of our friends. But aside from that as well, the other thing I want to mention, Matt, I'm sorry about the Packers, man. I know that must have hurt.
No comment.
Yeah.
No comment.